You're listening to a 3CR podcast created in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
G'day, Annie McLaughlin here for this week's edition of Stick Together, the only national program focusing on union news, workers' stories and social justice issues. This program is produced in Melbourne for 3CR and broadcast on the Community Radio Network with the support of the Community Radio Foundation on the stolen lands of the Kulin Nation, and we pay our respects to their elders past, present and emerging. As we put 2024 to bed, with its defining moment of Federal Labor's legislation placing the CFMEU construction and general division into administration, it is worth considering the bedrock of workers' struggle in this country, the first major event of post-colonial Australia, the Eureka Stockade. We go to the pre-dawn Reclaim the Radical Spirit of Eureka event, held in Ballarat on December the 3rd, on the site of the original stockade, where in 1854 the army and police attacked miners for daring to call for the end of mining licences and universal suffrage. Dr. Joe Toscano, convener of Reclaim the Radical Spirit of Eureka, will set the scene and political context of the Eureka Rebellion. Brett Edgerton, secretary of the Ballarat Trades Hall Council, outlines why Eureka remains a defining moment that colours workers' struggles to the present day. We end with some perhaps little-known details of that fateful day on the 3rd of December 1854, which, as one of the people speaking at the commemoration pointed out, the Victorian police have still failed to recognise their unforgivable role in the subsequent massacre, nor made public apology.
You're listening to Stick Together, workers' stories and union news.
No, it's a war on the workers.
War on the workers.
No, it's a war on the workers.
War on the workers.
Oh,
broadcast around the country every week on the Community Radio Network.
What's Eureka? To me, Eureka is encapsulated in the oath. And on 29th of November 1854, about 500 diggers, after the monster meeting, gathered round the Eureka flag, which was flown for the first time that day, and they swore this oath. We swear by the Southern Cross to stand truly by each other and fight to defend our rights and liberties. Now, this is an extraordinary oath. Many people claim the Eureka flag, but few understand the meaning of the oath. It was we. We had men and women and children, 25,000 here in Ballarat, from all corners of the world, many victims of political persecution, British Chartists, political refugees from the failed revolutions in Ireland in 1848, and the rest of Europe, who gathered here trying to find their fortune. They gathered here on this at Bakery Hill. And they decided after the meeting to come here and set up a stockade at this site. There's been a lot of investigation where the site was. Now, this monument behind us was established in 1884 by the Victorian government to mark the 30th anniversary of the Eureka Rebellion. And diggers who'd survive selected this spot as the site of the stockade. So we are standing on hallowed ground. As I speak, think of a stockade about an acre in size. Although 2,000 men had drilled with their arms on the second, the Saturday, there are only 104 in the stockade site on the 3rd of December because they never believed that the state would attack them on God's Day, Sunday. So just remember that. You're on this ground. This is where the battle occurred, and I'll speak about that soon. So we, that's everybody. There were people of all colours, all races, all religions, all nationalities. We swear by the Southern Cross. A lot of people take this as a religious symbol. The fact is, although you can't see it today because of the cloud, you can only see two things, two constellations in the sky in the Southern Hemisphere that you can't see in the Northern Hemisphere. One is the Southern Cross and one is the Morning Star, the symbol of the West Papuan independence movement. They're the two things. So you can imagine you've got a tent city of about 25,000 people. You haven't got, you know, the digital world, television, mobile phones, computers at hand. But when you looked up in the sky from your tent when you're trying to sleep, you could see the Southern Cross as a symbol. And they saw this as a symbol of creating a new world free of the persecutions and the class divisions of the old. So we swear by the Southern Cross to stand truly by each other. Anybody here involved in a trade union or a radical organisation knows that solidarity is the essence of success. As we see with the Woolworths store workers who are currently on strike, it's about solidarity. So we swear by the Southern Cross to stand truly by each other and fight to defend our rights and liberties. These men and women believed they were born with inalienable rights which nobody could take away. That was their ultimate belief. So in my opinion, the four symbols, the four pillars of radicalism, of the radical spirit of the Eureka Rebellion, are internationalism. We all have a common oppressor, irrespective of our religious beliefs, the colour of our skin, our gender, our sexual orientation. And people seem to have forgotten that in 2024. Direct action, taking up arms to defend what you believe are your rights and liberties. You can't be more direct act than that, direct action. Then we've got solidarity. And last but not least, we've got direct democracy. And I'd just like to look at this just for a minute. Because, you know, we think we live in a democracy. Every 3 to 4 years, we cast a ballot to elect representatives to make decisions for us for the next 3 to 4 years. Now, remember, this was a period before a PA. And you had monster meetings here in Ballarat of 15 to 20,000 people who came together, made decisions, elected delegates, send the delegates to Melbourne to, work with, try to come to a solution to the problem with the government regarding the licences. And then the delegates would come back and report to the next mass meeting. So this is a type of democracy which is familiar to many union activists and many union members, but it's a type of democracy that's been forgotten. So it's internationalism, direct action, solidarity and direct democracy, I believe, are the pillars of Eureka. Now, I could stand here and talk for 24 hours about Eureka, but I'm not going to. But I'll tell you one little funny story because, you know, there's always a little bit of humour. Why the Eureka flag? Why the Southern Cross? Well, when the Ballarat Reform League was formed on the 11th of November 1854, they needed a symbol. If any of you have lived in a big tent city, you really need to know where the baker is, where the grocery store is. And most businesses at that time and government agencies at that time had flags to denote who they were. So the members of the Ballarat Reform League were debating what symbol they should have for their movement. And the story goes, whether it's true or not, it's a good story, that one of the delegates went out to relieve himself in the night sky, saw the Southern Cross in the sky, realised its significance and rushed back, and the Southern Cross was adopted as the symbol of the Eureka Rebels. So, just a little history, because it reminded me of something, of why there were licences. And what Peter said reminded me of that. When Victoria was first invaded in 1835, it was the same time as the Industrial Revolution was occurring and the commons were being closed down in Britain. And the new industrial mills needed raw products. And a great raw product is wool, because you don't need to do anything with it except bale it and send it. So what happened is that within 20 years, 700 squatters had claimed all of Victoria. And the Aboriginal population of over 100,000 was reduced to about 2,000 within that 20-year period between 1835 and the Eureka Rebellion. Now, what happened is Victoria was declared an independent colony from... It was part of New South Wales in 1851, and a legislative council was established. The legislative council only had squatters in it. And when gold was first discovered in 1851, they tried to hide the fact that it had been discovered, because they relied on cheap convict or ex-convict labour to look after their sheep and shear their sheep. And when gold was discovered, they were very concerned about the possibility they would lose their cheap labour who would flock to the gold fields to try and find their fortune. So instead of introducing legislation to tax the gold that was wrought from the ground, they introduced legislation to tax the individual miner in the hope that they'd be able to retain their cheap labour and continue their domination of the landscape. So it was basically greed that created the licence, which was the mechanism which led basically to the rebellion here in Ballarat. The rebellions everywhere around Victoria. There was the Rushworth riots in 1853, which nobody seems to know about. But what I'm just saying is, it was greed. The fact that they made a decision to protect their interests by introducing a gold licence for the individual miner, which was an extraordinary amount of money.
You're on Stick Together, workers' stories, union news and social justice issues. We're at the pre-dawn service held on December the 3rd at the site of the Eureka Stockade, arguably the most significant workers' struggle in post-colonial Australian history. Brett Edgerton, Secretary of the Ballarat Trades Hall Council, took the mic.
Comrades, sisters and brothers, I start by acknowledging more than 60,000 years of profound connection to the land on which we meet, the Wadawurrung mob of the Great Kulin Nation. This land was stolen and was never ceded. I thought my theme for this morning would be those people who are ignorant of their history are doomed to repeat it. Australians are largely pretty blasé about our democracy. In the early 1900s, however, Australia was a powerhouse for democratic revolution and for new ideas. There were really ideas that were taken on by the rest of the world. Concepts like the secret ballot. I mean, who knew that in the UK, the Lord or whoever was standing for Parliament would stand at the door, watch you go in, know exactly who you voted for. Of course, you're only a rich landowner if you had the right to do that. Here in Australia, we seem to have abandoned this democratic tradition, and not by accident. For many, many years, successive Australian governments have directed Australia's common ideology, our attention to the Anzac legend and our military prowess, Of course, a slaughter of Australian citizens in a bad blunder by the British, and directed our attention away from the story of Eureka. Because for governments, really, the idea that a group of normal, average people coming together could bring about revolutionary change is a pretty terrifying idea for those in charge. And that really is, in a nutshell, what Eureka was about. So many historians and so many Australian stories sort of tell the story or the legend of Eureka as finishing with 37, well, actually lots more. We probably know 60 or 80 dead, including women, on the morning of the 3rd of December. Very few people tell the story of Eureka that continues after that to this day. For the mighty Australian trade union movement, its very existence starts here on the goldfields for two reasons. One reason, because all of the young workers were up here in the Golden Triangle digging for gold in Victoria, while incredible wealth was heading down to Melbourne and Geelong. They were building libraries and houses of parliament. There was a huge labour shortage. Now, the eight-hour day wasn't a concept that started in Melbourne. It had been tried before in the US, in New Zealand, in Sydney, and it always failed. But here in Victoria, the story of gold meant that because of the incredible labour shortage, but the incredible wealth flowing from the gold fields, that Melbourne stonemasons were able to win and sustain the eight-hour day. The other reason the Australian union movement starts here is because of what happens at Eureka. The story of Eureka, of course, is like everything in history, has precursors, has things that happened beforehand. So you go back to the 1830s in the UK, Industrial Revolution, agricultural labourers are moving into cities, working in factories, no social safety net, kids as young as five getting killed in factories. You don't earn a wage that day, your family starves to death. So the Chartist movement started, that Dr. Joe mentioned. And the Chartists demanded some pretty, well, what these days we would regard as pretty normal things, but in the days were pretty radical, the right to vote, the right for working people to stand for parliament, the fact that if you pay tax, you should have a say in the laws that govern you and your behaviour. The secret ballot was another Chartist idea. In the 1830s, the Chartist demands in the UK were met with bullets and incredible violence. Here in Ballarat, when the Ballarat Reform League Charter was formally and democratically adopted on the 11th of November, those Chartist ideals of the right to vote, of working men standing for Parliament, get committed to paper here in Ballarat. Unfortunately, it ends up, because of some pretty awful decisions by Ballarat Goldfield authorities to increase licence hunts and increase pressure on diggers, ends up here behind a stockade on the morning of Sunday the 3rd. But those democratic traditions continue. J.B. Humphrey and the Reform League continue to petition. And what happened after Eureka was that the people of Melbourne and Geelong were so appalled that British authorities would attack and kill civilians here in Ballarat, that the tide turned against the government. And those ideas, those Chartist ideas, get adopted and end up in the new Victorian constitution, the new colony of Victoria, but also spread up across Australia into New South Wales, into Queensland and other states, and end up there. And of course, in Federation in 1901, those fundamental principles of the right to vote, the right for working people to stand for parliament, short durations of parliament, the fact that landowners and landed gentry are not the only people that can vote. Of course, the franchise for women took a little bit more time, but in the 1830s, the original Chartists did put universal suffrage as one of their core goals. So it was an idea that, you know, back in that day, in those days, were adopted. This profoundly shaped our democracy and created the Australian we know today. The whole concept of a weekend, the idea of kids playing football and netball on a Saturday morning, the idea that you can sleep in on Sunday. These are all ideas that come from the eight-hour movement, from the union movement, and from what happens here in Ballarat and on the goldfields. And we should also point out, In Bendigo with the Red Ribbon Rebellion, all the precursors that happened to the massacre that happens here on December the 3rd, the agitation on the goldfields. These are things these days that Australians, I think, largely take for granted. We need to reclaim Eureka, and we need to tell the story about why we have these things. And we need to know why we have these things, and that's really important, because the one thing is they all can be taken away. They can be taken away in an instant if we forget about how we ended up with the democracy that we do in Australia and the rights and privileges that we have because of sacrifice here at Eureka and the push by many after the agitation here to achieve those democratic rights and to write them into the Australian psyche and the constitutions of the colonies at the time and the Australian Federation. So that's my message today. Go out from this place, educate Australians as to how they won their rights and privileges, how easy it is in an instant to lose them, and how Australians really need to embrace the story of Eureka, the winning of those rights, the sacrifice made by the men and women, many have massacred here at this site and on the goldfields in subsequent days under martial law.
You're on Stick Together, workers' stories, union news and social justice issues. We're at the pre-dawn service in Ballarat to revive the radical spirit of Eureka, and to finish off we go back to Dr. Joe Toscano, who gives us a vivid account of what happened on that faithful day in 1854 after the first assault on the miners' stockade.
Just to put a damper on all this happiness and spirit, it's daylight. By now, the soldiers and the police have actually overrun this stockade. Half of the 30 pikemen who stood there with pikes, handmade pikes, which were designed to cut the bridle of these galloping horses which were galloping towards them, over 200 horses galloping towards them. Half of them lie dead. 15 of the 30 lie dead, riddled with musket balls. Edward Fonan, the owner of the pikeman's dog, to which there's a memorial up the at the Eureka Centre, 13 musket ball in his body. As the daylight is lifting, there are tents burning. There are women jumping over and children jumping over the stockade, and there were women laying themselves over the bodies of wounded miners, wounded diggers, to stop them being bayoneted to death. There's smoke, there's screaming, there's fire, there's death, there's people in extreme pain. That's the situation as daylight broke. And as I said before, the Eureka Massacre began then. For the next 2 to 3 hours, there was just pandemonium and chaos. Children ran everywhere. And the local Aboriginal groups, the Wafarong and the Daja Warong, collected the children and kept them for the next 24 to 36 hours until their parents were able to take them back. So a lot of people say Eureka was about male suffrage. It was about much, much, much more than that. It was about interaction between First Nations people and other people who were brutalised by colonisation, the miners. It was about women trying to find a place in this new society. It is as relevant today as it was 170 years ago. And I'd like to congratulate you all for coming.
That's it for Stick Together this week. If you want to catch up with the program, the podcast is available at 3cr.org.au or at your favourite podcast site. You can contact the producers of the show at sticktogether3cr@gmail.com or by ringing 03 9419 8377 and leaving us a message. My name's Annie McLaughlin. Remember, wherever you are, whatever you do, there is a union for you. And until next time, stick together. We'll go out with David Rovick's anthem for Eureka.
From every corner of the world, they came from all around. When in 1851 they struck gold upon the ground. Every voyage was a long one, months upon the stormy sea. Some to seek their fortune, others escaping slavery. What they found on the gold fields was rule by brutish thugs, discrimination and taxation mixed with swinging billy clubs. The gold was getting scarcer and cops were getting worse. The diggers burned their licenses and vowed to end this curse. They swore an oath beneath the Southern Cross. They'd stand together and break the license laws. From 20 different nations they gathered here as one, in Ballarat beneath the southern sun. The crown tried to divide them, giving preference to some. The diggers wouldn't have it, they said it's all of us or none. They built a stockade while the redcoats massed nearby, and they heard the miners shouting, "We're ready now to die." The rebel miners waited for whatever lay in store, and on one December morning in 1854, the redcoats attacked the camp. Dozens there would fall amongst these brave gold diggers who'd risen to the call. They swore an oath beneath the Southern Cross. They'd stand together and break the license laws. From 20 different nations they gathered here as one, in Ballarat beneath the southern sun. The army thought it was over and things go their way. But when 15,000 miners rallied a month later on the day, the crown conceded everything, all of their demands. They'd won an end to license fees, the right to vote and land. So here's to Joe and Charlie, Waller and the rest. They drew the battle lines and put crown rule to the test. The diggers may have lost the battle, but they quickly won the day. And those shots fired in Victoria were heard 10,000 miles away. They swore an oath beneath the Southern Cross. They'd stand together and break the license laws. From 20 different nations they gathered here as one, in Ballarat beneath the southern sun. They swore an oath beneath the Southern Cross. They'd stand together and break the license laws. From 20 different nations they gathered here as one, in Ballarat beneath the southern sun.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.